Coming up on the next BMW Motorrad Rod and Talk podcast, the new R12 and R12 9T, and the young woman who played a big part in bringing them to us. Take a listen.
So the R9T is such an icon. It has become such an icon since it was presented. This bike became a very good base and a very popular base for custom bikes. Yeah. So the R12 9T is an even more elevated and an even better base for customizing.
Hello, my friends. I'm Sean Thomas. Welcome to the latest episode of the BMW Motorrad Rod and Talk podcast. Recently, during a trip to Munich, my producer Louise Powers and I had occasion to meet Corina Hofler, the product manager for the R12 model family at BMW Motorrad. Right away, it was clear that she was so interesting and so engaging that we had to get her on the podcast. Today, Corina discusses the new R12 and R12 9T, her long history and passion for motorcycles, and even some excellent advice for people interested in getting into riding. And of course, please be sure to subscribe, like, and comment on this and other Ride and Talk episodes. We very much appreciate your continued support. Now let's take a listen to Corina Hofler, product manager at BMW Motorrad.
We did a presentation on some of the new models, including yours. Mm-hmm. And Louise chose a photo to have up for the new R12. And it was a picture of you on the bike. And it was so funny about the picture is that you have this giant smile on your face while you're riding.
Yeah. And you can, and you're riding at a high rate of speed. You can tell in the picture that, you know, like if you're not just going slowly down the street, you're right. But you can see the smile through your helmet.
And what's so funny is that we know you and we know that that was not for the photo.
No,
like
absolutely not. So this picture was taken in Spain, in the south of Spain, when we had the press launch event in February this year, and I had the or I was able to join the photo ride because the picture rides are five times all the same road that the photographers can take many pictures in different angles, and I was able to ride one of them, and I could manage to put my mind off and just have fun with a bike. And this is what exactly you can see there, because it made me smile so hard and made me smile so wide. And it's amazing to ride this bike, and it's so much fun and so easy, really. And this is kind of crazy because it was the it was set up in the very beginning in the development of this bike. This has to be an easy kind of cruising cool bike, and this is exactly what turned out in the end. This is also what I'm very proud of, because it exactly fits the what we wanted to do.
People listening right now are thinking to themselves, okay, you're on a new motorcycle, you're in Spain, it's a beautiful day. Like any one of those things would create a giant smile, you know, but you had a new depth to that, which is awesome. Then, you know, you have achieved something very rare for this podcast, which is really cool for us, is that many people that we interview, they developed a love for motorcycles in their adulthood, and or maybe they came to work at BMW or somewhere along the lines, you know. And Louise is a great example of somebody that.
Yeah, I didn't start riding a motorcycle till I was 35. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was not that long ago.
But I have learned the people who start at the middle of their 30s are really hitting hard. So it escalates mostly very quickly.
Boy, is not the truth. Now, in your case, though, you were more or less born into motorcycles.
Kind of, yes.
Yeah. And tell us about that.
Yeah. So I grew up with a mom who was really a boxer kind of girl. Mm. So she was boxer riding. And I promised I'd bring you some pictures.
Yeah.
The first one, it is, I would say, so I was born in October 1988. And this was about when I, maybe in spring 89. And this is the first bike of me and my mom on her R100GS, the old two-valve boxer engine.
That is amazing.
And you are really young here.
Yeah, like, I can barely lift my head alone. So, no, a few months, maybe four months.
4 or 5 months, yeah.
If you're listening, look at the photos associated with this podcast, because this is amazing. And that bike is exquisite.
And so you can see also the smile on the face of my mom, because this was her dream bike. It was not easy to ride, and she's not that tall. And it was always kind of a challenge, kind of a struggle, but she wanted it and she did it. And this is what I'm very proud of, to be honest. And I think this is also something I inherited from her, to just do what you want. And so, yeah, this is the first picture of me on a motorcycle. And I grew up with her being in a motorcycle club, not this Sons of Anarchy kind of club, but just a community. No, just a community of men and women riding, having fun together, being on the racetrack, doing off-road events, everything. And this community always gave me a sense of home, a sense of friendship, a sense of being there for each other. And this is also what attaches me to this motorcycle topic. So for me, motorcycling is always about the community, about the people, about the persons, about staying together, doing fun things together. And this is also what is bound from the very beginning in my heart from motorcycles and the community.
Was it always a foregone conclusion that you would find yourself working in the motorcycle world?
I think working there is kind of my dream. Mm. I always wanted to work something with motorcycles, with vehicles, with the mobility, because I love traveling. I love riding on the roads. So, but this year is my absolute dream. Really, I could, if you told me 15 years ago or 20 years ago, I would work for BMW Motorrad. I would have never believed. So this is really a big dream came true.
That's very cool. So you grow up around motorcycles, you're in the clubs. And at what point was it time for you to start riding your own motorcycle?
Unfortunately, at the age of 18, mm-hmm. because in my youth, I didn't have the money to do my driving license or to make my driving license when I was a younger kid. And so I did my driving license when I was 18. Then I had to pause for 2 years because back in times, we had the restriction that you have to ride 2 years with, 35 horsepower, reduced power.
Yeah.
Now it's a little bit more. It's 35 kilowatts. So 48 horsepower. And yeah, so I only had a scooter, but my first adventure was riding with this 150 Piaggio 90s scooter through the Alps to the Lake Garda and to Venice. And I did my first motorcycle tour with this old screwed up scooter.
Wow. That is so cool.
And it's interesting because we, of course, people from around the world listen to this podcast, and the process of getting a motorcycle endorsement is different everywhere. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that here it's a challenge.
Yeah, it was kind of a challenge because obviously money is always a topic, but I did my homeworks and I waited for 2 years and then I had the fortune of having a generous mother who lent me her motorcycle, which was unfortunately not this one, R100 GS. She traded it in for an Africa Twin, the RD7 from 97. Oh, yeah. It's really also a beautiful bike. And this was my first motorcycle, which I was allowed to ride, and I did nothing else but ride. Every holiday, every free time, every minute was spent on this bike. And I always rode here to work, also in winter. And sometimes the people call me, "Oh, you are the girl with the Africa Twin, right?"
Did you hear that, Sean? She rode even in the winter.
Yeah, that's crazy.
This is what we do.
I don't know.
Some of us do this.
But we have to say winter here is about 1 degree or something in Munich. So at minus 10, I would not ride anymore.
Thank you.
I have to figure out, 18 degrees Fahrenheit, I was telling Sean, that's about the lowest that I would ride to work, and which is, that's pretty cold. That's minus something.
Oh, that's really cold.
Yeah.
That's really cold. At the point you buy winter gloves for your motorcycle.
Heated ones, plug in.
I'm not enjoying this part of the podcast. It's very cold right now. I am cold just talking about it.
Totally. So next week I can tell you something more because tomorrow I'm heading to Italy with a bike and we have to pass the Alps. And yesterday there were about 30 centimeters of snow.
Oh.
We will see how it works out.
Wow.
My winter gloves are, ready.
I'm going to Spain on Sunday and I'm in danger of getting a sunburn.
Don't make me jealous. That's not what I don't like where this is going now.
Okay. So your passion for motorcycles, you're into riding. Somewhere along the lines, you found a path here.
Yeah.
And can you tell us about that path?
So I was around about 18, 19 when I finished school, and I wanted to do something with product design, first of all. But I found vocational training which also had the headline of product design, but that means engineering. It was in engineering. So I did this vocational training for 2.5 years and I really learned to be an engineer, to develop parts. I worked with CAD program. And yeah, this is how I got into this automotive industry. And that back then I had my first project together with BMW Motorrad. It was the F800 GS Adventure.
Oh,
I did the fuel tank and the windscreen and every fairing part, and the people were so cool. It was so fun, yeah. And this was the first time I had contact with BMW Motorrad Development. And back then, I know, okay, this is where I have to go. This is so much fun. This is so much passion in there. And if you work together with people who love their job and who love the product they are developing, this is so enhancing and so elevating for everything.
Mm.
So this was, yeah.
In the F800 GS Adventure, that had an underseat gas tank, did
yes.
it not? So that's fascinating because it really was a departure from what we consider conventional fuel placement.
Yeah, that's right.
How interesting to help develop that.
Yeah, and that was a sizable tank.
Yeah.
So not like the F700 or the F800 GS, but it was a much larger gas tank than those two motorcycles. So you had to figure out how to cram that underneath the seat and yeah, in with the rest of the bike.
It was quite challenging.
Yeah, I bet.
And yeah, I worked together with the design department because you could see the fuel tank on the F800 GS. It was with covers, mm-hmm. with painted covers.
Yeah.
On the F800 GS Adventure, it was really completely visible. Mm. So we had to implement a cool design. And this was also a nice process to work together with the design department to get a product which is technical and lookable. And so
yeah.
This was really, I learned so much. It was just half a year or a few months, but I learned so much about motorcycles, about working together and about working with passionate people.
Somewhere along the lines, you also worked in a very interesting part of BMW, and that was the exhaust systems.
Yes.
And this is so fascinating because we discussed this a little bit and you talked about, and hope you can again, about the process of not only designing an exhaust, but making sure that, because exhausts change when you go from one country to another.
Yeah, the applications change, sometimes the exhaust themselves. And yeah, on the F800 GS Adventure, it was the plastic parts. I did many projects for the car department. And this was my first first job with exhaust and engine application at all. And I really learned a lot there. And it was tough, but it was so interesting because you learn so much about the coexistence of all the parts in a bike and the how they play together, because you cannot have a great engine without a great exhaust system. Mm-hmm. And we worked together with the engine application, and it was catalytic converter development was also a very, mm-hmm. very tough job and a very nice and technical deep dive.
Yeah.
And it's a part you can look at. So it has to be kind of appealing. It has to be nice. It has to resist high temperatures. It has to fulfill all the legal requirements of every country in the world. Mm. And so it's really so versatile, and you have so many departments which you have to work with. So also the swing arm is always a part where you almost collide, where you have some packaging problems, because
sure.
swing arm or exhaust system, they cannot share the space. And this was really all nice and tough discussions with the colleagues, but in the end we did such a great product, I think.
Yeah.
And it's still running on the four cylinders, so
very cool.
No, I'm really proud of this work and of the chance to have this deep dive into the technical aspects.
There's a sort of impression that that European emission standards are the highest in the world, and that if the standards are met here, then automatically they will be met everywhere else. And I was quite surprised to hear from you that no, not necessarily. Not that the emission standard isn't right, but maybe also the sound standard has to be met, and that is a variable from country to country.
Yeah, exactly. So emission standards and noise regulation standards are two different legals. They kind of always improve or get heavier, worse together, but there are two different standards. And yeah, the noise is the kind of how you measure the noise is differently in different countries. So in the US, you measure the noise level in a different way than in Germany. So this is also what we what we have to check, mm-hmm. that in every state of measuring it works.
I think that if I was doing that job and I had hair, I wouldn't have hair.
It appears that you've been doing that job then already.
It sounds very frustrating.
It sounds very intense. Like you have to put so much data from all over together to create one thing that works for everyone. That sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And also the noise is not only from the exhaust system. So the engine right. noise is also noise emission from the bike.
Yeah. Mm.
And also the tires, for example.
Oh.
These are also noises which you have to take into consideration.
There are some loud tires out there.
That is a
yeah,
true story.
Especially off-road tires.
We could have a whole podcast no. debate about tires.
About tires.
We're not doing that.
We're not going to.
Yeah. Don't ask people.
No, but this is also, you know, like when if a truck passes by, it's so much louder than a car. But nevertheless, on the electric vehicles, you also have the noises from the tires, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so these are also noises you have to take into consideration if you measure the noise emission of a whole vehicle.
Mm.
And so this is what it quite makes the topic quite spicy and interesting. Yes.
So the R9T, when it came out, was really fascinating, I think, for all of us, because I don't think that even BMW expected that bike to be as big as it turned out to be. And it was just this cult hit all of a sudden, this simplistic in look and design, the purity of riding without a big windscreen and the body position just in the right place. And the look is just right. And you're sitting in a cafe and you're staring at it. And they really hit the mark. And it's fascinating to me because in your current role, you have now taken that bike and carried it to it, the next level. It's got to be a little pressure.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So the R9T is such an icon. It has become such an icon since it was presented about 10 years ago.
Mm.
And this is really, it's hard to get on this level.
Yeah.
But we took all the customer feedbacks, the feedbacks from the market, and also what I want to mention before, this bike became a very good base and a very popular base for custom bikes.
Yeah.
So all the customizing shops, all the customizers all over the world took this bike, recreated their own bikes. And this is also what we took into consideration for the next family.
Yeah.
So the R1290 is an even more elevated and an even better base for customizing. Because one thing on the R90, which everyone loves, but which is very hard for the design lines of the bike, is the fuel tank.
Mm.
It is built around the airbox.
Mm-hmm.
The airbox is sitting quite underneath the fuel tank.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is why that fuel tank has this particular shape.
Mm.
But with this decreasing shape in the back, you always have this decreasing line in the bike. But on a roadster, for example, you want an increasing line. So it's down and low in the front and way up high in the tail. And this is also what makes it difficult on the R90, but it's more easy on the R1290 because we took this custom consideration into the development. The airbox went from underneath the fuel tank to underneath the seat bench. So you have this clear and not disturbed line in the vehicle.
Mm.
And also the fuel tank became symmetrical. So on the R90, we had this air intake, which also became iconic.
Mm.
The people loved it. But it's asymmetric, and it's not that easy for customizing. And now you can retrofit every other fuel tank because the frame is like it should be, a one-piece frame with a center tube.
Yeah.
And you can fit every fuel tank you like, every fuel tank that comes to your mind because you have no restrictions from the airbox anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one part which we took and elevated the bike for a better custom base and also for a better family base.
You know, what's fascinating is I didn't make the connection until you mentioned it, that the importance of both the fuel tank shape and the exhaust on the R9T, because they both pop mm-hmm. in a way that is, and it makes so much sense suddenly that you have come from the background of doing those two things for other bikes. And I'm sure that's how it went, right? I guess I'm imagining you working on an exhaust system with a little bit of grease over your eyebrow, you know, and somebody comes in and says, we think you're going to be perfect for the R90. Like, you got to come over here. That's exactly how it happened, right?
In my mind, yes. Not in reality, to be honest. I'm in this project team since 1.5 years, so I did not participate from the very first beginning. Yeah. So my colleagues did a very, very brilliant job in this, and I don't want to pick up all the good things just for me. It's really always teamwork. Mm. And we have what is a really big advantage of this project team. We have a project leader, a designer, a technical project leader who are customizers themselves, who are really into this community of customizing, of building, of feeling the bikes that much. And this is what makes the bikes so great, because there's so much passion, so much heart. And those people really, really know how to create a custom base, how to create the lines, how it works, how to create those lines from the past. This is really a really nice teamwork, and I'm happy to have joined this team 1.5 years ago.
It seems that you carry a particular amount of passion, certainly for the R12 as well. And
I really love this bike. It's so cool.
Yeah. And it is a fascinating departure from the R9T as we know it. It really is a very different motorcycle. And it, certainly the first thing we noticed, as we talked about earlier, is that you can put your feet down on it in a way. And that sounds like that was something you really wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. This was one main reason to build this bike, and one main topic which was always like a headline on this bike. It has to be easy and it has to be accessible. And accessible does not mean that you have to ride a 125cc or 300cc, which is always a struggle of small people, because they get told, come on, ride the small bike because you're too small for big bikes. And this is not it. So the R12 is a grown-up motorcycle. It has a grown-up engine, but it's easy. And also people who are taller can feel comfortable on the bike. So it's literally a bike for everyone. But particularly for entries, re-entries, for people who didn't ride in a long time, or for people just like us who want to have an easy and a good time.
That's my understanding, that you have maintained a connection with the riding community locally, like you had as a kid. Yeah. Is it the same community?
Not really, because I grew up around about 100 kilometers from Munich away. But I try to build my community here, or to get connected with everyone who's riding there. So I still have contact with friends of my mom. And they are kind of family for me.
Yeah.
But I do host the Motor Social meetings here in Munich, which is also a very big community event. I think this is also getting together with the easiness of riding and the exchange about this. So this is also, in my opinion, very, very important.
It's fascinating to me. First, you're now part of a community that you now host, that the same kind of community that brought you in and made you feel connected. And you're here building a motorcycle that can take people that are new to the community and make them feel comfortable on a big bike. What a fascinating connection.
It's like a wholesome picture now, right? You really make me think about this now, because every part of the puzzle gets together, right?
Yeah. And I'm sure that people in your community, they know what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're coming to you and saying, bring back the K75.
Best bike ever made.
Do you get that in the US or in Germany? Because in the US, we hear it all the time.
We hear it all the time.
The K75.
Yes.
Yeah. So the 3-cylinder Renault engine with a cardan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh? Crazy,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, they ask us all the time, well, can you tell BMW to bring back the K75?
I've never heard this before, but that's nice. To be honest, I don't know how the custom scene in the US is, but here in Germany or in Europe, the K series are getting more and more popular as a custom base, because the 2-valve boxer engines are really, they're so much expensive at the moment, because during the last 10 years, during the R9T hype, the 2-valves were the best base for customizing, but the K series are really coming into business now, I have the impression.
So now you've got this new motorcycle, the R1290 and the R12, which it's certainly in the case of the R12, you're really looking toward putting people on bikes that they can be comfortable on, even if it's a bigger bore bike. Yeah. You're also part of a community that is bringing people in and making them feel welcome in motorcycles. What is your advice to people that are interested in getting into motorcycles or are just starting out, and what path would you recommend they follow?
So my first advice would be get yourself some clothes who really fit well. So because well-fitting clothes are one safety feature and an absolute comfort feature, which you really need to have. Because if the helmet is not right or the gloves are too tiny or the trousers, pants do not fit, you know, it's not a good feeling when you ride. Yeah. So it doesn't matter how it looks, doesn't matter which color, just get the clothes you fit in perfectly, that fit you perfectly, better to say, and that you feel good. And then think out of the box, because I know so many people who want to ride a super sports bike because it looks fantastic. Yeah. Obviously, we all watched MotoGP, of course, but maybe a super sports bike is not the right ergonomics for you.
Sure.
Or not the right engine. No. So try out different engine types, engine sizes, different ergonomics, different kind of bikes, so that you get an impression how you want to feel on the bike, what makes you feel comfortable, and what makes you not think too much. And I think if you have those two components together, you can make your experiences, you can collect memories, collect scratches. It's important to collect scratches, in my opinion.
Yeah, of course.
And because you learn from those things and you get to know people, you get to know people who you can ride with, you get to know beautiful places. So it's all about riding. It's all about the way. And just go. Try to experience this whole world of motorcycling. There's so much to experience and so much to learn. And never think that you learned enough.
Karina, it was really good talking to you. Thank you so much for
taking
the time.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure. And yeah, stay safe and have fun riding.
Make life a ride.
Absolutely.
We very much hope you have enjoyed this episode. We want to hear from you, so please rate, comment, and share your thoughts about this podcast. We have many more episodes on the way, so please subscribe, follow along, and share your requests for future episodes of the BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk Podcast.